Management Training, and then moving from there to the Equal Hunger Strike protests as a collective body.
That was prisoner Todd Ashker speaking to his lawyers recently over a phone line from behind a glass wall. One of the hunger strikers hasn't eaten since July 8th. Very quickly, Azadeh, we have 10 seconds. The amount of time people are spending, Todd, among the many others who are protesting, the long-term solitary confinement, he was speaking from Pelican Bay. How long have people spent?
There are people in California who have done 40 years in solitary confinement.
That's 40 years in solitary confinement. We're going to leave it there, and I thank you so much for being with us, Azadeh Zarabi. A very happy birthday to Julie Crosby. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Mate Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Dina Gezder. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of Jim Hightower. This is the WHFR Journal, and it's new this week, so we call it the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronik, and Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director, is with me. So we're going to have a great show today, right, Dennis?
I think so. You know, I heard Hightower there, and I thought we were at halftime already.
Oh, he's so anxious to start talking here, you know. We got a couple great commentaries from him, by the way, folks, coming up. One is about how you, to know what's going on, you have to connect the headlines together. Interesting approach to being part of the media. Of course, that means you're reading newspapers or news magazines to even find headlines, because otherwise it's just a bunch of sound bites, you know, and they don't tell you what the headlines are really when it's on TV. And the other is the whole thing about militarizing the police, that because of terrorist alerts and that, there's pressure from the NSA to turn our police departments into military force units. And we all know what a SWAT team looks like these days. Right. They look like our soldiers in Afghanistan. I mean, with the same headgear and electronics. And of course, every time I bicycle by the Dearborn Centennial Library, I can look into the Dearborn Police Department gated parking lot, and we see their big military Humvee that they got for a special discount, only $50,000.
Was that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's hopefully we won't have to use that very often.
No, and they haven't, I think. Maybe it was out for the parade or something,
right,
Memorial Day.
For show.
They probably gassed it up. And it's a diesel, so you know, they can leave it sitting for a long time. Right. But you don't really want to see it patrolling your neighborhood, I don't think, with armed gunmen with their AK-47s pointed out. You know, that's not the America we grew up with, anyway. And so he's got a commentary on that, so stay tuned for that. Usually we do Jim Hightower commentaries, our friendly, nationally known populist, about halfway through the hour, depending on how fast we talk about the stories that matter to you most, because they're happening right here locally, or important to us locally. So this is why it is the WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views, too. All right. I want to jump into some stories, some of which missed. Can you believe that? We missed some stories over the last few weeks, and these are all from Patch.com. There might have been some mention in the Dearborn Press and Guide and Times Herald, but anyway, here we go. The first one is Dearborn City Council, and this is from August 8th.
Okay.
So a couple days after homecoming.
Right.
And I want to say to Patch.com editor Daniel Lai, or is it Lay?
L-A-I,
lie. Happy marriage. He's getting married this weekend, and the generosity of Patch.com just overflows. They gave him 3 days off.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really nice. He'll be back at it on Tuesday, and they have the regional editor in charge now. Because you got to have that news every day, right? You know, something always late-breaking happening.
Patch does a fine job.
They do. Yeah, and they do, yeah. So they approved a tax abatement for University of Michigan student housing.
Hmm.
First issue is that that housing there is actually a private company, an LLC, that's called UrbCam Michigan. UrbCam.
Like urban?
Yeah, I guess. Campus?
Yeah.
But okay, it's not owned by the U of M. So it's not public property. It's not a nonprofit. It is a private profit enterprise. Of course, it's right across from U of MD. U of MD helped get the idea going because they felt they didn't have room on campus for adequate housing for students that didn't want to commute, that wanted to come from maybe further away.
Which is interesting because there are a couple of buildings that were at one point used as dorms, weren't they?
Right, and now they're faculty offices.
They are, okay. Yeah. They were abandoned for years. We'd go walking by there.
Sometimes they were, yeah, and they might still be now, but I know several times that I've walked or biked through that area, I thought they had faculty in those offices. Maybe they've relocated faculty when they get new buildings built. So, but it never would have accommodated more than about 20 students.
Right.
Or 20 families, if you will.
Right.
20, 30 units at most.
And, at the most.
And this looks like, well, whatever it is, 100 or whatever.
Well, what's interesting is that, and as we know, we had Dr. Stan Jensen, the new president of Henry Ford Community College, and he said there are even Henry Ford students there. So this is not, you don't even have to be a student, do you?
Right. Yep, nope, and you don't have to even be a student, and we went over the costs, which I thought were a little huge, but, you know, because in students, you would think that they could get a little bit less costly than what a real apartment in the community costs.
The other way around, though, sure.
Well, unless you're sharing some of these units as four people, then obviously it brings the cost down.
Right.
And, of course, in college, I was in the dorms for undergraduate education and graduate education, too. I was in a residence advisor, as they call them.
You were an RA?
An RA in Ann Arbor when I was in grad school.
So you're a snitch.
But it was free housing, you know, and food. So it was worth the price, or worth the upset.
It's not being popular.
Yeah, I couldn't sleep until everybody else was asleep, so I usually went to sleep about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Oh, you took your stuff seriously.
I was able to get grad classes in the later afternoon, because it seems graduate students don't wake up until after 12 noon.
Apparently,
Yeah, so I was lucky to work that out. But, no, my problem here is that... is they're getting these tax abatements, and it's always my problem. Now, the official law is called the Obsolete Property Rehabilitation Exemption Certificate.
Wow.
Now, there was a building there. I wouldn't call it obsolete. It wasn't being used, but they tore down that office building,
right,
whatever business building that was there before, and built up the apartments on the same property. So under Michigan law, the certificate effectively freezes the taxable value, which is $1.26 million, by the way, almost as much as Dearborn City Hall.
Right. That's another story.
On the property for the duration of the exemption. In addition, the property taxes for the property are based on the previous year's prior to rehabilitation, taxable value.
So what they're saying is if you rehab it to make it worth more, it's kind of grandfathered.
Yeah, the same thing as the dilapidated, unused property was before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Dearborn is going to give them this, and so let's see, is there a total loss to the city? Well, it's significant, folks, okay? It's millions. Now, it's true that UrbCam Michigan LLC has invested roughly almost $30 million in the project, and they plan to create 55 permanent part-time and full-time jobs once the building opens in September. So the criteria for giving this exemption is that it has a, quote, reasonable likelihood to increase commercial activity, to create employment, to retain employment, and to revitalize an urban area within the community.
Okay, the last one is the only one that I disagree with.
Yeah,
you're not revitalizing an area because it was never a down area. It's always been nice. It's not
no,
like it was blight.
And it's only going to give a few more students to U of MD.
No, but, you know, the point I think is that all the businesses around it will, you know, Fairlane and all those areas.
Will they tend to shop more at Fairlane?
I would think so.
Maybe.
A&W.
They still have to walk across the parking lot to get there, but it's not as bad as it was. They put up somebody, the state, perhaps, or is that the Wayne County? They put up a crossing and a light on Evergreen Road as it heads from U of M D down to Michigan Avenue.
Finally, yeah.
And I've never seen it on yet. I drive that every day coming up and down there. Yeah. And I don't know if they just not haven't activated it yet or whether it's only when people want to cross, they push a button.
That's probably the case.
And then that will stop the flow. I think that's more logical. Of course, there's a timer so that it wouldn't stop more than like every 5 minutes or whatever, but so I don't know what that is, but it's good to do that.
You know, if they could solve the problem with the people that stay in the apartments and shopping at Fairlane, they could build a monorail that would be elevated above. I'm kidding.
Yeah, riding on rubber wheels on an elevated highway that fills up with snow and ice. That's a great idea. I wonder if anybody's ever tried that. Ford Motor Company, the old Hyatt. Yeah, and that didn't work like crazy. No, I think we're past that.
Good, we learned.
Got to get the exercise and walk. By the way, there's a ribbon cutting and grand opening for August 21st. I've said on this show before, and of course, here comes the caveat. Opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, but they might be. Anyway, I'm not in favor of tax abatements. I mean, you know, first of all the businesses that are already here are extremely jealous. They say, well, where's our tax abatement?
Right.
You know, we're here, we're trying to keep going, and we don't get any help. And I said, well, it's only to get these things going, to get them started. I mean, obviously, in this case, it wasn't to secure that location,
right,
like in Dearborn, because that was the whole point. U of MD students who wanted housing.
Weren't you under the impression that U of MD had more to do with it than we're finding out now?
Well, it became a private company. Yeah, they started it. They looked at it. They were going to do this or that down by the historical museum, perhaps,
right,
and buy some land there. And there was, remember, that motel on that corner before it was torn down that maybe could have become residential housing.
You're exactly right, because I know that was used as overflow for the car dealership. But there was a long time that was open.
But they figured, oh, that's too far away, because they'd have to go on that path through the woods
to get
to the college. And there's that like 45-degree angle slope there. It's great coming down in the winter.
Yeah.
Get your sled out. But going up, oh, my God. You know, even in the summer, there's a lot of senior citizens and people that don't get any exercise, that have real struggle either walking or biking up that to get up to Michigan Avenue. That just... And I say, well, it's a recreational path. It should be a little challenging. But I'm not sure it should be that challenging. That's a long stretch. I mean, I do it in my bike. I've got to go as fast as I possibly can and then quickly shift in the lowest possible gear and then pedal like crazy, pumping, standing off the seat to get up that hill. And it takes like, it seems to me, like a full 60 seconds of pumping to get, even heading into it from down below, as fast as I can go. So I think it's a little too steep for a recreational path, but they figured that was too bad a walk or long a walk.
It's about half a mile.
And, yeah, whatever. And they probably got a deal from whoever still owned the property around Fairlane Town Center. Did that revert to Ford Motor Land?
As far as I know, it's all Ford Motor Land.
You know, and, of course, as we know, the big tax abatement people in Dearborn, which may be done under different criteria, but Severstall over 12 years is getting, I think, $77 or $78 million of tax abatement they don't have to pay, and Ford Motor over I think the next 5 years, if I'm not mistaken, close to $50 million still.
But that's been an ongoing thing, and it's just
renegotiating. Ford is always re-asking for a tax abatement for one reason or another.
Technically, it's not a new business, right?
No. I mean, would they really dare? And I think the answer is yes. Would they really dare to leave Henry Ford's birthplace with their world headquarters? You know,
where would they go?
Anywhere, like Tennessee. I mean, you know, no taxes, complete tax abatements for as long as you want to be there. I mean, you know, in some parts of the country, some states feel, well, we got nothing else happening. You know, I mean, it's nothing. So a whole city will grow up, and there'll be schools, and there really could be tremendous consequences, economic advantages for a state that gives that kind of almost tax-free situation to a business coming there, especially like a big business like Ford World Headquarters, in an area of the state where there's nothing right now,
right,
where they're going to create a city, create a town just for the people that will be there in that headquarters or that their business. So I can understand that, but I think that's unfair competition, and there ought to be a law, federal law. Oh, my goodness, here we're Cornick's talking about federal laws. Look out. Remember, I'm not I'm not an all-out federalist, folks, if it matters. I mean, and don't believe what I say, but there are some things the federal government should do to allow what they used to call an equal playing field.
Right.
And to devastate Dearborn's tax situation by giving all these abatements is completely unfair. Okay. And I don't think there's going to be that economic positive consequence from these apartments to equal the abatement. But we'll see. Doesn't matter now. It's a done deal. So thank you, Dearborn City Council, for that.
Are we still on council? Are we going to talk about?
Yes.
Art space?
Yes.
Okay.
That's there's two more. The Dearborn ordinance has been passed, making it unlawful to drive under influence of pretty much anything that intoxicates you. And of course, my question is, now this is just the city's version of what Rick Snyder passed into law, that the state of Michigan passed in January, where the law broadly expands the legal definition of drugs and drugged driving to include any intoxicating substance. And of course, there's a lot of what they call designer drugs now that really will intoxicate you and cause you to drive badly, dangerously, certainly. And the state can't keep up with classifying each one and putting it into a law.
Or being able to detect it either. I mean, you could be on something that they have no idea.
But as Dennis and I were talking ahead of this, we have laws against reckless driving.
Right.
If the police observe you driving erratically, they can stop you, and I think you get a ticket for reckless driving, reckless endangerment or whatever they call it. So now, of course, if they can charge you with several things, then, of course, you get to stay in jail longer.
Pay more money.
If there is a jail to hold you,
right.
Of course.
Yeah. And the whole, it's very difficult to prove. And as when this law first went into effect statewide, a friend of mine who's an attorney said that a lot of people are going to be able to fight this based on their own civil rights.
Right. A lawyer at the Thomas M. Cooley Law School in Ann Arbor, Patrick Barone, writes that the vagueness of the definition, this is in Patch.com story, vagueness of the definition could open up a Pandora's box of problems. He says, quote, the law further defines intoxicating substance to include anything other than food that is taken into a person's body. You mean a sugar high wouldn't cause you to drink erratically? Of course it would.
Drive erratic.
They have exempted food.
Right.
Anyway, you know, eat too many candy bars in a row. And seriously, folks, you get a buzz on. And probably go crazy driving anyway. But they say anything that you take into your body other than food that is used in a manner or for a purpose for which it was not intended. Yeah, but if it was intended to give you a high.
No, and it would be like somebody takes tea that you would normally drink and then they put it in and they smoke it instead.
Yeah, he adds here, drivers can now be stopped and arrested for using dozens of common and uncommon herbs such as ginseng, magnesium, which is good for your heart if you're old, melatonin, which is a supplement if you're having trouble sleeping at night, but oh my gosh, folks, I tried it once where I thought I was just tossing and turning. Well, I'll try just a small dose, and I was like drugged out for the next 8 hours. I try to get up in the middle of the night, as old people sometimes have to, and I'm stumbling around it. Gee whiz, I've never had a natural substance. So I must be all full up on melatonin naturally. That it must have been stress or something else that was causing erratic sleeping for a while. And basically, I don't have trouble with that. But anyway, so I understand melatonin.
Sure.
Whoa, what an effect. If you're not lacking it, it will really make you groggy. And if you're deficient of it naturally, then maybe a little supplement at bedtime wouldn't hurt. But they also mentioned chamomile. Isn't that a tea that you drink?
That's my favorite tea.
I thought that was a relaxing sort of tea.
Sure.
And relax too much, you fall asleep at the wheel?
It says right on there, honestly, do not operate heavy machinery, so I can't do laundry.
I don't think that's true. But Dennis makes a lot of jokes, and I hope you get the exaggerated tone and heard the ba-dum-bum. Did you get that? Ba-dum-bum.
Sorry.
Okay, and you know what that means. Now, Dearborn Police Chief Ronald Haddad, but you said I've been mispronouncing it for years. It's Haddad.
I call him Haddad.
Okay, well, I think maybe it was a distinguished person in management here at WHFR stopped and told me it's Haddad.
Really? Okay.
So the next time we see him, we'll have to find out. No disrespect, but every time we've interviewed him and I've introduced him that way, he's never corrected me, but maybe I'm such an authority he doesn't want to correct me.
And on the news, anytime he's in a story, which has been lately.
You've heard Haddad.
Haddad, yes.
Haddad. Mm-hmm. That's why I've said it. Well, anyway, he commented that officers in Dearborn, of course, would exercise quote-unquote common sense.
Okay.
Yep. When conducting a traffic stop. He said, there are clear signs a driver is under the influence of a substance exhibit that our officers are trained to pick up on. Yeah. Tell me the training you need to pick up on to detect chamomile.
Are you asleep at the
wheel? Imbibing and chamomile, yeah. I mean,
you look way too relaxed.
And then how do they test for it?
Right.
Do they pump your stomach, and is there a test you can test
smell
for chamomile
breath.
Tea?
I don't know.
They can't smell your breath with that.
No.
And the ordinance, of course, goes into effect immediately.
Sure.
So, again, you know, it's like stop and frisk and so on. Can police, even well-intentioned police, start doing profiling based on that and then abusing their powers because they have all that discretion now? Do we have to trust that every officer is going to use, quote-unquote, common sense? How common is common sense? Most people would say not very common these days anymore.
Right.
And especially not if you're a police officer. I would think you'd want to have some good objective criteria, especially when they come to try to sue you in court. But now there's an amendment that says, well, whatever you think.
Well, that's the thing, and I think the point of the Cooley Law School professor, the point was well taken. If you make the law too broad, you think that gives them too much power. On the other hand, it's a really ripe for appeal. You know, mm-hmm. the appeal process.
I think they, and you said maybe they get more money off of a couple of laws being broken,
mm-hmm.
But reckless driving, if they see you cutting people off and slamming on your brakes, and of course speeding is a separate ticket, I believe.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe they ought to charge more money for reckless driving.
I think they do.
I mean, at any speed, reckless driving is clearly a hazard, although how do you define reckless?
Well, yeah. Driving.
I mean, I can give you a list. I mean, I think there is an objectivity to the whole question of reckless driving.
I think speeding in an illegal lane change would automatically constitute reckless.
Okay. Well, a court in Dearborn, and which court? What, U.S. District Judge David M. Lawson. So it's not our court, District Court 19 in Dearborn. This is a federal district court. He ruled last Friday that the city of Dearborn is not obligated to pay almost $1.2 million that was awarded in another court ruling to a former 19th District Court employee, Julie Pucci, who's now, if she changed her name, Julie Hunkren, married to another...
Mrs. Judge Hunkren.
Mrs. Judge, yeah, who sued Judge Mark Summers for wrongful termination. And the criteria is that the court case originally was just suing Summers as a private citizen.
Right. Which,
And so the city of Dearborn's got nothing to do with that. Well, of course, it was while he was a judge and while the state of Michigan had him appointed as their chief administrator. So as a private citizen, he would have never gotten into doing that job or making that decision, whether it was correct or not.
Right.
And so I've said on the show before, I think that is totally a wrong assessment in the first place, but I wasn't in the courtroom, okay? But in this case, I don't understand how he's going to get stuck with $1.2 million on this. It was only because he made a decision that was interpreted by the courts, of course, in June 2011, almost 2 years ago, over 2 years ago now. But then there was a question, who's going to pay that $1.2 million? It has to be the state of Michigan.
But
because he was doing a job, he made a decision that apparently was decided not to be fair, and he terminated, as I understand the criteria, he terminated her position, and she claimed, oh, you know, he was biased against her for this reason or that. But I don't think that could be conclusively proven. But nonetheless, was she at-will employee? And
mm-hmm.
at-will employee means they can be fired without notice or explanation.
Right.
Like all of our adjunct teachers at the college here. Part-time people, generally, have no expectation of extended employment, and they are considered at-will. At least at the end of each year here, anyway.
Well, with his decision, though, he claimed it was based on making the court more efficient and cost-effective.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, downsizing.
Reducing a position, which is what the city council wanted to do anyway.
Right.
Oh, you're spending too much money. Well, I don't think we need this person. And, of course, because she was the live-in girlfriend of William Hunkren, and apparently Judge Summers, off the record, has said he personally is not in favor of people cohabitating like that.
Sure.
And it was because she was working there and she was living with the other judge. does that taint some of her work for the court?
Is there a conflict? Sure.
Is there a conflict of interest as a live-in girlfriend? Right. I think yes. There's a question anyway, sure. And therefore there is a conflict of interest. So I liked his rationale. The court didn't find it true, and I go with the court on this, but I'm certainly advocating that somebody appeal, because I think that the city, which is off the hook now by this latest ruling, unless that's appealed, it's got to go back to the state.
Now, do you remember when they were debating who was going to pay back in the day? One of the attorneys, the attorney for Ms. Pucci, said, well, she still has to get her money. Let's start. And they actually garnished some of his money, I think to the tune of almost $3,000.
I think after he filed this appeal, which is now settled, they postponed
the
payments.
But you could see where it was headed back then. I never thought he'd be on the hook for it, though.
Yeah, and you know, $1.2 million, did he really do anything that wrong, folks? I mean, you know, what if you add up her salary, which couldn't have been more than, somewhere between $30,000 to $50,000, how many years' employment does it get to $1.2 million? I know
it's
also
legal fees. That's what we determine.
Well, it's legal fees, but it's also mental injury.
Sure, duress or whatever.
Yeah, sure, it's stressful when you're out of work.
I think it was $400,000 in legal fees, though. Which we thought was a little bit extreme.
Well, something like that. It was biggie.
Yeah.
But that's what they charge these days, I guess.
We're in the wrong field now.
So, again, we're not saying who's right or wrong here. We're just saying that's the situation. And, you know, what do you think? We can't really – it's all in the courts now, so it doesn't matter to us. But if I was in Summer's position, just for the sake of saving money, I probably would have dismissed that court employee if, by analysis, and he was right there – in the, you know, that person's job wasn't needed. Oh, well. Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. They just delivered the mail.
Did
at
they?
WHFR. Yes. Although there was already two males here.
They're going to deliver a female any minute.
Well, I'm waiting for that. Nice. Yes. Oh, it'll be Joanne Kurczynska at 2 o'clock.
There you go.
Okay. Also in the city. I think we're done with the city of Dearborn for a second. But the Dearborn Public Schools, they missed the top ranking in new state assessment. Well, thank you, Patch.com, for putting a positive spin on it. Nobody in Wayne County or Oakland County, no schools got the top rating. And you know it's color-coded now.
Yeah.
There's green, and then the second category down, green is best, lime green. So lime green's got to be pretty close because it's just a little brighter green. Because
sure.
I personally prefer lime green.
That would be your
green,
number one, right?
Yeah, lime green's right there. I think my next car might be lime green.
Don't. Please don't.
Yellow, orange, and red. And so, yeah, Edsel Ford High School.
Edsel Ford.
You familiar with that, Dennis?
Both of my children graduated from Edsel Ford High School.
It got the red.
The red.
The red.
It all went downhill when they left.
You know, like a threat assessment in the olden days.
Right.
But this is more colors, I think, than that. Maybe not. This is five colors. Green, lime green, yellow, orange, and red. Red being the bottom. And I think threat assessment was like that.
I think so, too.
After 2001.
I never paid attention.
9/11.
It seems so arbitrary to me.
Well, it was always orange. Sometimes it dropped to yellow. But it was crazy. So, well, if it's always orange or yellow, it's the same as ever. So why should we even know about this?
Exactly.
It's always the same. There's always a chance something will happen.
Sure.
Well, that's life, folks.
Yep.
There's always a chance something will happen. You've got to be prepared, but what does that mean? Carry your duct tape with you? No. I mean, it's just, as George Bush said right after 2/11, don't let the terrorists win. Keep shopping. And keep watching television.
But save water. It can't hurt.
All the commercial broadcasters said, yes, keep watching television all the time. Special CNN ratings went up.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, we want to keep making profits on national catastrophes, you know.
I love the media.
Oh, yes. That's why we're in alternative media here.
That's right.
Dearborn High School did receive an orange rating ranking.
That's
so good for them.
Third best?
No, second worst.
Oh, geez.
So it's not red, which is the worst.
Okay, good.
Dearborn High School in West Dearborn, and the others are yellow.
Fordson?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's happening in Edsel Ford? Well, it's not good, folks, because now they are under a special state authority for school reform. It's called the State School Reform Office. Ta-da.
Catching name
yeah,
there.
That seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And they will be required to implement an intervention model. intervention, like they're addicts or something, to improve student achievement. Apparently the scores for student achievement have been declining for the past 4 years, getting worse and worse
and worse.
As soon
as my kids left.
Yeah, they were the ones holding it up, I guess.
Yeah.
And of course, the scores were lowest in science and reading, two of the most important skills you need for the future. How is that possible, folks? How is it? Can I speak to any students out there in high school? Are you listening? No, you're in high school today, probably.
Oh, no, school hasn't started yet, not until after Labor Day.
That's right, not
so
until after.
So they're all listening, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure they're listening. Well, get your act together. Get your act in gear, is what Wolfman Jack said in the great movie American Graffiti.
Great movie.
It's a Wolfman. Get your act in gear. Yeah, you know, get going.
Also, the Wolfman imitation caused a little grief.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that. Didn't have all the phlegm in my throat yet.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
we'll save that for another show.
So anyway, the current principal, Scott Casebolt, is a little concerned because one of the things the district can do is fire him. Well, not really. It's only his first year. So he's got plans to add some staff. I thought they just got rid of staff throughout Germany. That was teachers. So he's going to try to add them. Excuse me. A math and literacy coordinator.
That's the price you pay for a really, really good imitation, a really good impression.
I'm taking a chamomile tea.
All right, there you go. Don't drive home on it. They're adding a math and a literacy coordinator to work exclusively at the high school, providing extended learning time for students. And your issue, of course, that you just brought up is that this would be a coordinator, wouldn't be necessarily a teacher, but they let, what was it, 21 teachers district-wide? Is that...
No, this time it was just seven that were laid off.
Okay.
Just seven.
All right. Just seven.
This year. Yeah.
Okay.
But, and I don't remember if anyone was actually that has a Ford. Whoops.
Boy, we're really regretting that invitation.
But who else here? Oh, they're going to expand for everybody there. It's a Ford. So if you were thinking of getting out at 2:15, folks,
think again.
You're going to be stuck there till 3:15.
Right.
The other high schools, I wonder how many going to transfer high schools. Can they transfer this late? Because that means Dearborn High and Fortson, they'll all get out at 2:15.
It's school of choice in Dearborn, but it might be too late.
Edsel Ford is going to be stuck now to go an extra hour, extended learning time, an extra hour in order to take extra classes to bring up their skills. And I don't know who's going to teach those, but they're also going to be adding more professional development opportunities for teachers.
Which is training.
What skills do these teachers not have?
Reading and science?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know. Computer skills?
Well, daughter graduated from there a couple years ago.
And
she wasn't thrilled.
No, and I wasn't thrilled as a teacher either, but that you can't blame two decades ago on today. But.
No, and I know that they've gone through a series of principals. I know that the principal when my son was there, Jafer, I work with his wife at the TV studio, he was promoted, I guess you call it. Congratulations were in order because he's now with the school, the actual district itself, and not with the school.
Now, if you are a parent of an Edsel Ford student, you want to hear about what's happening, you're concerned about these things and why they're keeping your kids for the extra hour, a meeting is scheduled for 7 p.m. September 4th at the high school. So, let's see, the 2nd is the day after Labor Day. So no, that is Labor Day.
That Monday. Is the week of school, then.
So the 4th is a Wednesday.
That's probably when school was supposed to start.
Right. There'd probably be a day for teachers the day after Labor Day, then either a part day or a full day on the 4th. So that evening, September 4th, Wednesday, for Edsel Ford parents at 7 p.m., you can go there and hear the story and find out what's happening.
How much time do you think that the school had? I mean, because they're putting this together. Ideally, I'm sure they would have rather had the meeting prior to the school year actually starting. They just got these results back.
The story was in Patch on August 20th.
Okay.
And it said the Tuesday before that, well, today is the 23rd,
right.
So it's this week. So was it Tuesday of this week? What date was Tuesday of this week? -3:20. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe it was the Tuesday before. I can't tell. But within the last week, that's when the Michigan Department of Education released these accountability scores, and that's how Edsel Ford got the lowest ranking of red.
Ever.
They're not the lowest in the state, necessarily. I'm sure there's some red ones elsewhere, but I'm just saying it's they're in sort of a special reform-type situation monitored by the state now. So,
right.
And Superintendent Whiston did say, what is that phrase that he used? I thought it was...
I can't even read that small print.
Well, they're... Yeah, well, it was such a long story. And goodforpatch.com, usually you just have something I can do, print out in one page.
Really?
But this is, I had to reduce it to 3 pages, but it was actually longer than that.
You have to look at it with a microscope, though. It's...
Basically, he said something, we're going to own up to it. You know, we're going to roll with the punch, and we're going to make changes aggressively. And as I said, the principal, Case Bolt, said... that they're going to make changes this very year, and we've already indicated some of what those are in general. So we'll see where that goes.
But going to school an hour later never came up, did it?
Well, not in the past.
But no, I mean, we've talked about it a million times, okay. But it's interesting.
Well, let's take the half-hour break here, but you're not taking a break because you want to listen to Jim Hightower talking about how to get into those headlines, connecting the dots, connecting the headlines to know what's going on, and also I think the very important statement about the federal pressure from the NSA and the TSA and all those acronyms for government intrusion in our lives. Opinion. But here comes Jim Hightower. Listen to what he has to say and take notes if you need to.
Headlines for economic news stories tend to conflict and confuse. So let's play Connect the Headlines. We'll try to find meaning in 3 competing headlines from recent news reports. Back to school revenue lousy, grumped the first one, noting that parents were being all fuss-budgety this year about purchasing clothes, backpacks, and such for their kids. The August start of school season usually is a giant profit generator for the likes of Walmart and Macy's, but shoppers, damn them, have been so reluctant to buy that chains are resorting to deep discounts in a desperate effort just to get some customers in the stores. Headline number 2 was more upbeat, jobless claims at 6-year low. It seems that fewer people are being fired these days, down by half from the dog days of the Great Recession. Still, that's more than 300,000 workers per week having to go on the unemployment rolls. Read down below the headline, though, and reality begins to come into focus. Less firing, you see, doesn't mean more hiring. America's self-proclaimed job creators aren't. So the millions of unemployed workers still are. Then, the third headline brings us full circle. Many new jobs, either low-paying or part-time. Actually, the proper adjective is not many, but most. So far this year, 61% of those lucky enough to be new hires had to take low-paying jobs. And 77% of the new jobs provide only part-time employment. In other words, today's corporate powers are not creating near enough jobs to meet America's needs, and the jobs they do create are piss poor, leaving people with paychecks that can't even keep up with today's historically low inflation. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, connecting the dots, few jobs and poor pay for America's workaday majority equals lousy revenue for big retailers.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Attention citizens, I have received inside information revealing that global terrorists are targeting us again. Their target is not Washington, New York City, or even Disneyland. Rather, it is Concord. You know, in New Hampshire, the state capital. Even though only about 43,000 people live there, Concord apparently has strategic significance, for the local police, fully backed by the city council, are preparing for a horrific terroristical assault. Specifically, they're seeking $258,000 from the Department of Homeland Security so they can gird themselves by purchasing a Lenco Bearcat G3 armored vehicle. This bold stand to defend the homeland was revealed by the New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union, which obtained a copy of the grant request. Actually, it is not Al-Qaeda terrorists that have Concord's police gearing up for war, but, quote, the domestic type of terrorists. Really? In Concord? Yes, insist police, referring vaguely to daily challenges and warning that the threat is real and here. Who are these domestic demons? The police finger 2 groups, Occupy New Hampshire, whose violence has mostly been in the form of doing litter pickup days, and the Free State Project, a libertarianish outfit trying to convince 20,000 like-minded people to move to New Hampshire. Neither group is armed or dangerous, and both are committed to nonviolence. Yet the police claim they need a Bearcat G3 to respond to terrorism involving, quote, chemical, biological, and radiological materials, as well as explosive gases. This is Jim Hightower saying the most explosive gas in this case is coming from police officials who have tagged their own peaceful citizens as terrorists. And the real threat to our security is the Department of Homeland Security, which keeps shoveling our tax dollars into the militarization of police forces all across the country.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
And here we are. Oh, no, no, no. Highway 61 going to get started. Ahead. Oh, yeah, this is a fast-moving show. We can't keep things going there. But I hope those were stimulating commentaries about the media and also police force. And as I said at the start of the show, you can really see that militarization of the Dearborn Police Force. Is it really needed? No. I'm sorry, Chief. It's clearly not needed, but since everybody's doing it and you got a special grant or a great deal in a Humvee, you know, you probably should take it because you'll be criticized if you don't by anybody who wants to make political hay of, oh, we're not ready for the worst terrorist attack. No, we're not ready for the end of the world by an asteroid strike either, but nobody's making a big deal about that yet. So we're just watching those movies and, you know. Remember one of those, it was great, Morgan Freeman was president
of
the U.S. Yeah.
Excellent movie.
I mean, Morgan Freeman for president. He's been asked if he wants to run. But
well, he's also played God in Bruce Almighty.
That's right. So he qualified in several arenas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're here at the new WHFR Journal talking about local news and alternative views. And a couple things from last week we just wanted to clarify because I didn't see them. Dennis saw them in Press and Guide from last Sunday. Dearborn Council takes two more steps in helping art space to buy City Hall. Again, they had to sort of rezone things for that housing and make the application that art space is sending to the state for a special grant in order to do the renovation of this facility to make it possible. I think they want $17 million from the state of Michigan.
That's right.
And is it called brownfield redevelopment? Some sort of redevelopment money. I mean, brownfield, is it contaminated there?
That's usually what it...
Yeah, I don't think City Hall is... some people say it's contaminated with politicians, but...
Oh,
ooh,
the views expressed. No, sorry.
A lot of hot air over the years has weakened the structure of the building.
Oh, boy.
Okay, all just metaphors. And of course, Tom Tufelski asked again to clarify, is that money from Severstall that they're giving as sort of a payout for money they promised over a number of years to help pay for a conference center that would be attached to the Hyatt Regency Hotel, which doesn't exist anymore, and that project is dead for maybe forever, but for a while. Mayor O'Reilly clearly said that Severstall, it's different than the Ford Motor Company giving... $5 million. I thought they gave $8 million. I'm sorry. I lived through this. I thought Ford gave, $10 million to the Performing Arts Center, the community center, to allow the building to be completed with a theater and so on. But the whole place had to be named Ford. It couldn't even be called. They wouldn't allow it. The Dearborn Community Center. Or... provided by Ford Motor. No, it had to be called the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And by the way, if you Google that, you'll find 10 or 15 Ford Community and centers, at least, if not performing arts around the country, because
sure.
They were in a phase of donating buildings, renaming all everywhere. Every major city pretty much has a Ford something or other in the U.S. now because of that movement for a while. But he said Severstall's money, which is like $7.8 or $8 million, almost $8 million, I think, can be used for anything the city wants to, and they don't have to attach the name Severstall to it, such as the new City Hall. Would it be called the Severstall City Hall?
I thought that was part of it. I thought Severstall did want name
rights. Well, Mayor O'Reilly, he suggested that, you know, that they move that sort of Veterans Park commemorative stuff to the next door to the new City Hall,
right.
And it would be called the Severstall Park.
Okay.
I mean... But does their name have to be on something? I don't think that's clear. The mayor said, well, it's not the same kind of agreement. But is there any agreement? Because the mayor has been always mentioning the name Steve Ristall whenever he's suggested, not Steve Ristall City Hall, but whenever he's suggested where the money goes, he's suggested the name be there. And the last I heard was, if it goes to art space, that Steve Ristall's name be over the door to the old City Hall.
Mm.
So it's a Steve Ristall art space or something. I've heard him either directly or indirectly say that, and in print too. And I know Tom Tefelsky, I got the name right
this
time.
Yes, you did. Good
yeah, it has picked up on that from his campaign literature, from O'Reilly's campaign literature during before the primary. I hadn't seen that literature at my house, but anyway, the mayor says nope, the naming rights are not guaranteed in that agreement. But they sure sound like they want to do it for them.
Right. And, now, you said that this is what just passed was mostly a rezoning. They want to take the two wings and make
it
into residential.
It doesn't, right. It's not rezoned now. It's
exactly.
Just they told the state of Michigan that if the grant comes through, they will have permission from the city to have people live in the in the reconstructed building.
Not surprisingly, Tom Tefelsky voted against that.
Right.
And I think Nancy Hubbard abstained, if I'm not mistaken.
Because it was a 4-1. Or Sereni wasn't there or something, whatever it was. Anyway, Dearborn Heights is worried about firework ignition.
Mm-hmm.
Fireworks.
This
are
is
are people shooting off firecrackers any time of the day and night over there?
No.
Dearborn Heights, Dennis, you work there.
As you know, the state law says that you can have shoot off fireworks, and not just the ones that were before, but now they're more commercial. They're bigger and badder the day before, the day of, and the day after a major holiday, and that includes, you know, Easter, Christmas, New Year's, whatever.
Dearborn actually has time periods. I mean, they have a certain time of day for the day before that you could start.
Well, they couldn't until recently. The state just revised the statewide law, so now the city ordinances can do a little bit more, and that's basically what you're hearing in Dearborn Heights.
Well, in East Dearborn, I seem to hear fireworks almost every night still.
So yeah.
Somebody is still setting off fireworks somewhere. Not
right.
Legally, I don't think, but I mean, if I can hear them, and it's not Greenfield Village, the Henry Ford anymore.
Right.
No holiday. So, and I don't know if it's dangerous or not. It is. It does bother some people's sleep, especially if you go to bed early.
Well, the big thing is if something is a projectile, where does it land? You really don't have as much control over it as you'd like, you know.
And as we briefly mentioned last week in Melvindale, the city had official stories in the press and guide here. City does need money to pay for the merger of the fire departments. Something like $1.2 million. Or they can't merge
right.
with Dearborn? Oh, my God.
So they're asking for more money. And,
from the state.
And, of course,
or for a grant or something.
Oh, right, exactly. But yeah. I think Melvindale had another issue where we did touch on, where the council people actually walked out because there was a gag order. But this particular thing, completely separate issue, is the money would come from the state, and they're very optimistic. So it may be a matter of time.
Because the state has plenty of money, right?
Oh, yeah. We're in Michigan.
Yeah. They're not giving it to Detroit, so why not give $1.2 million to Melvindale, you know? I do feel that's wrong, folks, by the way. Somebody should help Detroit out here. But, of course, they're already bankrupt, so I guess it's past the time of taking handouts.
Yeah.
Editorial opinion in last Sunday's Press and Guide. You might want to read it, folks. Morris Goodman's column. He talks, this is just a headline. It says, Binkley, that's Edward Binkley, folks. Binkley's run for mayor is admirable, gutsy.
Hmm.
Okay. So it's admirable, comma, gutsy. And it's a nice little piece that he's written there about Edward Binkley when they were out to lunch together. I think Morris picked up the tab on that.
All right.
Times Herald talks about a couple of things that are in other papers, but Sue Suchita has a nice preview of the HFCC Main Stage Theater play opening this weekend. Did it open last night? I don't know.
I don't think so.
But it's this weekend and next weekend, entitled Drinking in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some experience with that, Dennis?
With being in the theater program here?
Being
yes.
in America.
Sure.
Not drinking. Of course not.
No, and for the people that were wondering, it was scheduled to open last week.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few people, I would imagine, thought that was the case. No, it's the same thing. It's just opening a week later. And it'll be this week and next weekend.
And this is a play by Eric Bogosian.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric Bogosian is famous for writing many plays that were very big on Broadway. And his first play, may not have been his first, but a play was, I think it was second, Talk Radio, was made into a movie. It was based on a real DJ who was controversial a liberal DJ, if you can believe it, for a talk show host who was basically liberal, and got into trouble with some of the more conservative elements reactionary elements of Denver, I believe it was, and he was killed by either one or several people who disagreed with him after one of his shows. And for the movie version, Eric Bogosian actually, since he wrote the play, they adapted it, changed some things, of course, to make a movie out of it, because the play was a monologue. It was just like this talk show host doing his show for 2.5 hours talking about all these things.
And did he play himself? Okay.
Yeah.
No kidding.
So it's a great tour de force performance by him, but also the movie was good. And remember, based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which doesn't mean it's...
And there was more interaction in the movie.
It wasn't, of course, there's more than one character. Yeah, right. Okay, it wasn't just a
film. He wrote Suburbia, which has been performed here a couple years ago.
Yep. Yeah, and so this is Drinking in America, which is not pro-drinking, of course.
No.
So there's a raft of movies coming on one this weekend, End of the World.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but isn't that more of a comedy?
The World's End. Well, it's a comedy, but the idea is that these guys, they missed out on their drinking, their pub crawl of drinking at 12 bars in a row.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to recapture their youth and actually complete that pub crawl.
Before the world ends.
Right. Because they discover along the way, or at least the last bar or whatever, is that the town has been taken over by zombie robots.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So it's sort of a little sci-fi.
Must be in England.
And they suggested that, but apparently New York Times reviewed three movies, including this end of the world thing, this comedy. And it's all about going out and getting drunk and drinking till you're blasted and still having fun. And it's, in other words, it's pro-drinking.
Right.
So Drinking in America is not pro-drinking, so it's not fun. It's also for adult audiences only, folks, here, but it's a great theatrical experience.
It's not just about drinking. It's about drugs as well, and it's very edgy from what I understand.
Yeah. It's a number of monologues from different perspectives, different people, different socioeconomic levels or whatever, and very well done. So it's not just an average person standing up and blabbing an Alcoholic Anonymous session.
In Sue's review, she says it's how people use alcohol and drugs to make their fantasy their reality, to convince themselves that their fantasy is their reality.
And maybe we can have the director on next week. We'll see if she's a veteran. Mary Bremer Beer.
We've had her on here before, and she's wonderful. Yes.
If you're thinking about theater, this is a very challenging, powerful, dramatic experience. Not for young people.
No, leave the kids
in
the car.
It's at Henry Ford Community College main campus, the Adre Auditorium in our Fine Arts Center. And usual times apply, 8 o'clock Friday, Saturday, and matinee 2 p.m. on Sunday. And I'm sure you can get more information at the hfcc.edu website. But check out the story, which is the only story that's got into the papers this week. For some reason, Dearborn Press and Guide didn't even get it into their Wednesday paper, I don't believe. So Dearborn Times Herald covered it this week. But important theatrical presentation by our really excellent theater department.
And good job to Sue Sachita. Mm-hmm. She covers these things, all of them.
A couple new hotels are coming into Dearborn, Dennis and I, and this is going to be at the southwest corner of Telegraph and Michigan Avenue.
They've been talking about this for a long time, but that wasn't what originally
it
was supposed to be.
It formerly was
there.
A Wendy's hamburger stand and then a movie theater.
Showcase
right next
theater.
To it. So the movies, it used to be Dearborn Theater in the
That's
olden
right.
days.
Okay.
Dearborn Theater.
The olden days, before
and,
sound.
Right. And I don't think that was there before sound. But anyway, that whole area is going to be two. Holiday Inn Express, which is Quickie Rentals.
It's by the night.
For maybe by the hour. I don't know. It's for business people, sales people who are just going to be here selling something and then they're on their way. I don't know what they're selling, but nonetheless. And then a Residence Inn.
It's a different name, a Parkway Inn or Suites or something, but it's long.
The idea is they at least 4 days or more. So, I mean, if you want to see all the sights in Dearborn, it's going to take you at least 4 days, right, Dennis?
It depends. Yeah, and
and the surrounding areas, of course.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, okay, Greenfield Village, Henry Ford, that could be 2 days. I mean, really, positively it could, although I usually, because I'm very familiar with the Henry Ford Museum, because I do mall walking there instead of the mall. They actually
really?
Allow you to walk quickly because not many people go there during the day, unless it's a holiday or something. And so I go up and down every single aisle, and I can do it a fast walk, 20 minutes.
Where is you go in the museum itself?
In the museum itself.
And they don't charge you, you just walk through?
Well, I'm a member.
Oh, okay.
Anybody who's a Dearborn citizen wants to support the Henry Ford, and you buy an annual membership.
Yeah.
But actually, it's, you know, I don't. I've done the mall walking thing, and that's great. And whether it's too hot or too cold out, to get your exercise, you know, upstairs, downstairs, do the stairs, walk around. But then I'm constantly bombarded by all these buy this, buy that ads. You know, it gets a little exhausting because I'm not there to buy. You know, I just zoom right past. But
see, I'd say go earlier because the mall opens early for people to walk before.
Right, it does open
but
about
you
9
don't get up
for that.
That early.
Oh,
too.
No. Oh,
I think that's been well documented.
Now, anyway. Why do you think the show's on at 1 p.m. on Fridays?
That was your call.
Uh-huh, yeah. No, it's actually because of Craig Folly's show on WDET. They were on early in the morning. We switched to the afternoon. And then they decided to go at this time in the afternoon for a while. And so they were right on top of us.
Wow.
And then when Craig Folly came back, they did the two-hour thing, and they went back to the morning. And I want to congratulate Craig Folly. He's now the co-general manager of WDET.
Yeah, congratulations are in order.
Imagine a talk show host can become a co-general manager. And it's also a woman, I can't remember her last name, but Michelle, who was in their administration, some sort of development director for WDET. He and she are co-general managers because Mike Alsesser has moved on to some private foundation somewhere or program radio TV production programming company.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. But I think it's great that and Dennis is happy to know that a talk show host can actually move up to big time management someday.
I'm sitting in the same room with somebody who did that. So
yeah, well,
I believed it a long time ago.
I know that I can always move down if I want to. At least,
there's no place.
There's always
to
room
go.
At the bottom.
That's
you know,
right.
So I'm ready for that. Well, we only have 5 minutes left, but still a couple of great things to tell you about. And well, I do want to mention for historical issues. And we should always remember history, or you're doomed to repeat it. But in a way, we wish we could repeat in a new version, a new better version, if that's possible. This is the 50th anniversary tomorrow of Martin Luther King Jr.'s "I Have a Dream" speech, and I'm sure you've heard about this in the commercial media. There is going to be a big march gathering in Washington D.C. tomorrow. On the mall, as they say. That's not a shopping mall, by the way.
No.
And I was there for a big civil rights march in 66 or 67, which, no, 69. Okay, remember what year it was. And very crowded. And but it's important to do that. I remember in college, when I was in college in 1964, there was a civil rights march that was announced, and it went out through the churches. I was here in Michigan at Oakland University as a student, and in my freshman year, and all the local churches said, you know, we're going to go down there and ask for civil rights, and we're just going to jump in our cars and drive down there overnight. And so in the dorms, we thought, what an idea. Let's go to Washington, D.C. for the weekend. And we just jumped into our cars, and, you know, we divvied up on gas and that. And I called my mother before I left. I'm taking the car to Washington, D.C. this weekend. What? You know, because what is it, 800 miles or something?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, so we drove all night long, and the next day we were literally mental zombies. Are we really here? It's like a dream.
Yeah.
We had no sleep. And of course, you had a lot more access in those days because now they have the White House pretty much cordoned off. They don't do tours anymore.
Right.
You know,
but the mall—that's where the president is sworn in. So I mean,
that'll
hold Congress. How many people,
yeah,
you know.
House of Congress faces the mall, and so speakers are up on the steps, and then everybody is down.
How many people were there when you showed up?
Well, it was typically they can do 100,000. I think there was a couple 100,000 for Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech.
Wow!
And it's huge when you look at it. Just look back
You know, it's funny. Popovich was telling me when he was a kid, his friends were going into. He lived in California, and they were all driving somewhere north in California, pretty far away, and they all had to go. And they were going to protest something, and Popovich was ready to go, and he couldn't make it. His car broke down.
Let me say, they're not at the mall. Okay, well, maybe there's more than one gathering, but Common Cause, which is a great nonprofit group, you know, fighting the powers of lobbyists and campaign reform and many other issues. I was a member, a local activist, in fact, for Common Cause for many years here, or back in the olden days. But they say the March on Washington is going to be at the Lincoln Memorial So you know what Abe Lincoln looks like. Sure. A sort of squarish building and a big statue of him inside the columns. And it's going to be tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Okay.
So don't get there at 2:30. You'll miss it. So 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., March on Washington, Lincoln Memorial. I don't know if there's any buses. I have not seen anything about buses going from Dearborn. I know that Peace Action of Michigan has recommended everybody go down there. And Common Cause is doing that. Also, I know Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, not a Republican, not a Democrat, independent senator from Vermont, has asked all of his supporters and followers to be down there. I was last down there on the mall for the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert thing in 2010. It was October 30th, 2010. What was that? End the Sanity March?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, that was great, too, and a huge number of people for that. If you haven't done something like that, you really should if you believe in it. Right here locally, the Citizens for Peace people are having an event that is not just about peace, but it's called their Peace, Love, and Yoga Days. And planned for a while, it was intended to be on Saturday, August 24th. It's going to be at the Livonia Senior Center from 8:30 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon. The day includes lunch prepared by their own George Mills.
Yeah.
There you go. And the schedule provides a variety of yoga sessions for beginners and advanced students, including sun salutations.
Have you done yoga? Are you into that?
No, I don't bend that way.
No.
Yoga for All is going to have instruction about that. Chair yoga, so if you got a chair.
Sounds like more my speed.
Well, that means you don't have to get down on a mat.
Right.
You know, chair yoga means if you can't get down on the mat and stretch that much. Laughing yoga. We do that on the air here.
I want Lazy Boy recliner yoga.
And also flowing yoga. Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're making waves.
Have you ever heard of sleeping yoga? Because I'm going to invent that.
Yeah, that could be good. Anyway, meditations sessions with Kathy Henning, Mandela coloring, which is a Buddhist sort of thing, folks. Words from Diane Kinescuk and the 10 Keys to Happiness Practices, which is a film by Deepak Chopra.
Oh, yeah.
And you can register in advance, but it doesn't cost too much. This email doesn't say how much, but lunch is included. That is the second annual Peace, Love, and Yoga Day, Citizens for Peace, and the Yoga Association of Greater Detroit. It's a special day. I don't know if young people are allowed, certainly not children, probably.
Right.
It doesn't say they have classes in yoga for them, but try to remember the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech. We need to keep our dreams together. We need to do more. Anything we can to make peace be the default setting in our society.
Don't be anti-war. Be pro-peace.
There you go. What a great way to sum things up and to end our show for today, August 23rd. This has been the new WHFR Journal for Dennis and myself. Thank you for listening. And keep reading those local newspapers and connecting those headlines. And don't stop digging deeper. Now it's time for Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61, the best in blues. WHFR, Dearborn.
The longest highway that I know.